Well, I'd like to say good day to all the listeners of KGVM. I'm Steve Kirchhoff. I'm here with Jeff Milchin, my partner in crime. We are broadcasting from the lovely confines of Joanne Troxell's brick farmhouse on West Lammy in Bozeman. It's a sparkling morning on September 13th, 2019, and this is KGVM's The View From Here. Today our subject's going to be broad, I think, in the scope of what we talk about, but I'd like to at least anchor it in one big thought, and that is the sense of place. As everyone who lives in Bozeman, no matter how long you've been here, newcomer or old-timer, knows, our city is in an environment of change and churn, and we are experiencing breakneck growth that exceeds even most people's imaginations, particularly those who've been here for a long time and have a before and after picture in their minds. So with all that in mind, I'd like to talk about a sense of place today. That's generally our topic. What is the sense of place that has drawn us to Bozeman? What is the sense of place that we feel as we move about in our community, in our day-to-day lives, doing our jobs, being with our families, walking on the sidewalks, getting on the trails, visiting the rivers? What is the sense of place to each of us? And I expect that we'll have different answers to that question, and it might be evolving as our place is evolving, too. I don't know what we're going to get. Oftentimes when we talk about a sense of place, we think about the cultural offerings of a location. We think of university towns, we think of industrial cities, we think of agricultural towns. We often think of the geography of an area. We might think about port cities, seaside towns, and mountain towns, and prairie towns, and we can think of amenities and services when we think of places as well. Does a place have an airport? Is it connected to the interstate? How close is it to a major hub of activity? Today I'd like to have a conversation about sense of place, and particularly the sense of place that Bozeman and the outlying areas, Gallatin County or as broadly as you want to go, provide us, bearing in mind that our answers to the question will probably be different from one to the other. I'd like to focus first on this place we call Bozeman. And I'd like to begin a conversation with as much openness as I can, because for me, places in general, and this place in particular, Bozeman, help us to articulate who we are in ourselves. The place interacts with us and we with it. It elicits responses in ourselves, and the places, the buildings, the streams, the sidewalks, the locations have memories inside them, right, that can sort of activate how we feel as we go about. So anyway, it opens us up in particular ways because of what it is, and we respond to the landscape, to the buildings, the pace of life, the fabric of the built environment, the people that we share the place with. So it encourages each of us to have a response, and how we respond is how we represent ourselves to ourselves and to others as well. My first question, and I'd like to start with Joanne, and maybe Joanne, you might start by introducing yourself. My first question is, what does the phrase "a sense of place" mean to you? How do you understand that, Joanne?
Well, it's an interesting phrase because it's been around for quite a while. Like all of a sudden, people were saying things like, "Place matters. It really matters. It matters in some intellectual, psychic way, and that somehow it frames and shapes you as you live in these places." But we did this all very unselfconsciously, just lived in place, and then suddenly because of changes, we started thinking about, what does this mean, a sense of place, in a very personal sense? And for me, a sense of place is very complex, because maybe because of my age. I'm 86. And so the sense of place is not only the past and memory, but it's also the future. And what's ahead is much smaller than what was behind, so memory is really important to me about a sense of place. Mm-hmm. So, I think where you first grow up always has a certain glamour, and no matter where that is. And I happened to grow up on the Flathead Salish Kootenai Reservation in Arleigh, Montana. We moved there when I was 8 years old. And somehow it was like paradise. And one of the first memories I have is this small house with one bedroom, and there was myself and my two brothers. My father had died. And so there was one bedroom, and so my brothers lived, two couches in the living room. But it was 80 acres of absolute freedom. But on that 80 acres, when we first got there, there was a building, a small, squat, very strong building. And I asked my older brother, I said, "What is that?" And he said, "I will show you." And he heaved this door open, and the smell of Macintosh apples assailed me. And forever and a day, a Macintosh apple takes me back to that place and that particular reservation and that fall day, and I never can get over that. And when the Macintosh apples come around, I'm like, they're saying, there they are, like they are some gift from my imagination and life as an 8-year-old on the reservation of Arley, Montana.
That's a sweet memory, Joanne. And if I just might update the listeners as to who you are, in addition to being a native of Arley, Montana.
Well, I'm a Montanan through and through. And I really understand that a sense of place has this sort of identity. And maybe because Montana is so wide and varied, and my grandfather opened up Plentywood, Montana, in the northeastern corner for homesteaders. So I come from homesteader stock. And I think that I've always had that a little bit in me, like starting out anew.
Right. How did you start out in Bozeman? When did you come?
Came to Bozeman in 1961. And I didn't know anything about Bozeman. I was from Missoula, that area, and the reservation was 25 miles north of Missoula. So Bozeman was a total mystery. I just didn't know anything about it. But my husband wanted to come here, and he said, there's good fishing and hunting and logging. And he was a contract timber faller. And so we came to Bozeman, and it was like, it might as well have been across the ocean as far as my understanding of what Bozeman was. And we first drove in here. It was April, and there was 4 feet of snow on all the buildings, and I thought it was enchanting because the sun was glancing off, and it was like going into a fairyland. And I just fell in love with it.
And you came here to teach?
No, I came here actually to go to school, finish my education. And that was the other thing I told him. I said, well, it has a college there, so I'll finish my education. And he said, fine. So we were in total agreement with coming here. And so I enrolled at the university, which was called Montana State College then, and I came from the University of Montana. And I noticed an incredible cultural difference from the University of Montana and Montana State University. And, of course, the university was called the Dancing School, and Montana State University was called the Cow College. Mm-hmm. And really, those two words, where they're sort of derisive in a way, but they're also descriptive in those subtle ways that people kind of pronounce what they are. Mm-hmm. And we were the dancing school in the sense we were the art school, we were the law school, and this was the ag school and a whole different culture, really.
Mm-hmm. And then you settled here, you taught here for many years at Bozeman High School. You were my teacher, my beloved teacher. Taught me Brit Lit my junior year. I'll never forget you. I've forgotten all the literature.
You know, it was really interesting because I went to school here and I had already had so much literature at the University of Montana because it really prided itself. It had a fabulous English department. And when I came here, the English department was more of a service department. But that sort of amazed me. And but anyway, I finished here. They kicked me out of school is what happened because they needed English teachers. And California would come to these schools all over and say, we'll take any teachers you've got and move to California. Well, I didn't want to do that because Montana is mm-hmm. kind of my grounding and also my memory and a lot of my heart.
Yes.
So they came and said, look, you've got to graduate because I was going to go on to graduate school. And I said, oh, I'm not really ready. And you know, they said, yeah, you got to go.
But the upshot is you stayed and you became a very beloved high school teacher.
Well, actually, before I came here, I went to White Sulphur mm-hmm. for 2 years. And it somehow Bozeman kept drawing us back and some health issues and so on. And it was very hard to get into Bozeman Senior High School because they'd have 200 or 300 applications. But the principal there and the principal here knew each other, and so I got a recommendation, and so I got to teach here.
And did you find that Bozeman held up its reputation of being a cow town during your time here?
You know, no. I think there was that definitely, where the economy, the ranchers would say, the economy in this town is us. But the university would say, the economy in this town is us. Mm-hmm. So there was this sort of a little bit of antagonism, of recognition about what was the base of this town. And, of course, this was settled by ranchers and farmers. So they had a great interest in claiming that economic destiny. But the university kept growing and growing, and so that had a destiny, too.
Mm-hmm. And did it become more of a dancing place over time?
You know, it was different. But one thing I found is that when I taught at Bozeman Senior High School, it was a fabulous high school. In fact, it was way beyond what I could have ever imagined because I never went to a high school myself that was ever as good as Bozeman Senior High.
Good in what sense? You mean good students or?
Well, you know, it was very white, and that shocked me, you know. And also when they would say Mrs. Troxell, I didn't know exactly who that was. But they sat there, they looked at you, and if you gave them a program that was the least bit interesting, they were with you. And I just had never seen anything like that. And I started out by teaching American novel, which I loved. And these kids were just fabulous. And so when teachers would complain at Bozeman Senior High because they might say one child had done something and they would be going on and on about it, however they was going to hell in a basket, I just would say, I don't get it. Because they'll sit there and listen to you, and they will be respectful. And I just never understood one complaint about Bozeman Senior High.
So your sense of place was, to a large extent, sort of inflected by your interactions with Bozeman youth. And you found them to be interested and curious and motivated.
Oh, yeah.
So did that make a larger sense of place for you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the thing is that if this was the place with the magic roof that I saw in the sunshine that April day, the students were the magic of the people that lived in those houses that had those magical roofs, you know? Mm. And I just totally, totally felt like I'd arrived home. I really liked that job so much. It was kind of incredible.
You stayed there for several decades.
Right? 23 years. And the thing is that I love literature so much. And so my place has always been somewhere in my imagination. But you could go there and they would believe, they would suspend disbelief. And I used to be amused. I would say, do you know, we're talking about this story as if the people were real. Do you ever think that's kind of crazy? And they would just look at me blankly and say, yeah, but you know. So it was, yeah, my place intellectually and psychically was very much every day I went to that school, I smiled. You know, I just smiled because it was like, a gift. Mm. And when I got paid, it was like finding money in the street, you know? So it was a happy experience and definitely framed the way I looked at this place. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that I came here, the reservation that I came from and from the time I was 8 years old was so beautiful. So lovely and had the Indian population that I think it stretched me in ways that I can't even imagine now at this age, mm-hmm. you know. But sometimes when a friend from there visits, I have an old friend from the second grade. I have two friends from the second grade and he's coming. He went to Bozeman and I went to university. But anyway, he's coming for the Bobcat game. And when we get together, we talk about that sense of place we had there in the Jocko Valley with the magic of that beautiful place, like paradise. And I think that Bozeman was a contrast to that because the winters were so cold here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a sense of place is somehow bought this house. And nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted this house. It was derelict.
The house that we're sitting in now.
The house that we're sitting in
such
now that I've lived in for 52 years. You know?
Yeah.
And
it's wanted now.
Yeah. And it's like, talk about sense of place.
Right.
I mean, it's like location, location. Mm. But when we bought this house, it was like everybody was going out to the burbs and building. They wanted to be out in the country. And to me, I said, well, all I have to do is walk down Lammy Street until I get to Rouse and I'm out in the country.
Right.
So that's not true anymore, you
no,
know.
Not anymore.
But it was just absolutely fabulous to step out the front door. I walked to school from this place. But at that time, we used to kind of call it a pile of bricks.
Yeah.
A pile of cold bricks. And it was a cold house. And that was something I didn't realize so much because I was, you know, teaching and Vern was working. So when I retired, I realized, my God, I'll freeze to death in this house. And then I started saying, how can we live here if we don't do some insulating and not all that, you know?
Well, thank you for starting off our conversation about the sense of place. Jeff, can I turn to you and get your thoughts and reflections about the same question? What sense of place mean to you in connection to Bozeman or what other connection you might want to make?
Sure. Well, it's an interesting topic for me to try to wrap my head around. I think you have so many different components of it. It's partly physical, the physical environment. Part of it is local culture. Part of it is your personal relationships. Part of it is how well you choose to invest yourself in a community and get to know the nuances of a community. And it's a tough thing to kind of generalize in my mind, but I think, you know, in the Gallatin Valley, we certainly have communities and Belgrade and Bozeman and Livingston that certainly have their own individual character. Part of it is the physical environment. Part of it is, you know, the fact that most of them are centered around at least older communities, even though there's a lot of new development, certainly in Bozeman, Belgrade, Four Corners especially. But a lot of it, I think, is also there's the abstract of the sense of place, and then there's the individual feeling of it.
Yeah.
So I think Bozeman could, as in terms of your thoughts, Steve, you know, you could have a very strong sense of place or a very weak one, depending on what you bring to it, in a sense. Similarly, with any of the communities here in the Gallatin Valley. Why don't you pick things back up, and I'll see if I have some more useful ideas to contribute in a few minutes.
No, thank you, and that's a great start. And I guess I want to pick up on this notion of give and take. That's not what you said, but that's how I take it. That the sense of place is the product of where you are and all the things that are given to you and provided by the place, but also what you return to it. And I guess
it's my choice, I think, is what I'm trying to say is, you know, you can choose to be in a place, live there, drive in and out of your garage, not have a whole lot of connection with the community and have very little sense of place. Or, even if you're in one of the newest subdivisions, you can choose to invest yourself in getting to know the community and know your neighbors and have a very strong one.
Right. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. My take on this question is, I guess, that I didn't choose Bozeman. You know, it chose me. I didn't choose to be born here. I just came here, right? One day in 1962, a year after Joanne got here, I'm so glad she was here to shape the sense of place for me. But, I was born in this place, and I think I've always, it's a book that's writing me. Like, I'm inked by the surroundings to a certain extent. When I look out my window, when I was a kid, I grew up at the intersection of South Grand and South Third, because Grand does a dog leg to the right, and it intersects up by the university with South Third, and that was the end of the universe, because everything turned to dirt. Grand at that time was dirt. Third past Grand was dirt. Kagi was dirt. And there were barbed wire fences, and there were fields, some with cows and calves and some with bulls, and there were barns and streams. And I would get up in the wintertime, and it was freezing in the house because my father loved to sleep with all the windows open. And I would be looking for a place to get warm, sort of scrambling in the morning with my whitey-tidy underwear on, and I would lie down by the radiators on the floor, and I would wrap the curtain that went all the way to the floor around me, and then I would stand up, and I'd have the curtain wrapped around me, and I'd be looking out the window at the Bridger Mountains. I'd be looking at Baldy, and I'd just stand there, and I would just stare at it for a long time. And I remember my father used to come out sort of befuddled, and he would say, "What are you doing, boy?" And I would say, "I'm looking at the mountains." And then he would just turn around and walk away. He didn't know what to make of it. But for me, it was just the place really got into my bloodstream. I don't know how else to say it. It got into my central nervous system. And I think that's why I have such a profound love for it, is because I can't imagine myself elsewhere, in a way. And so when I think about the place, I actually think about the landscape. And then I think about the community. And the community was always so amenable and non-intrusive to my sense of being in a landscape, because it did, as Joanne said, it did end at Rouse. It did end at 11th. Then it ended at 19th. You know, it ended at Peach and Durston. And now it just keeps going and going. And so my sense of place is changing. But I think for me, it starts with the Gallatin River. It starts with the foothills of the Bridgers and that sense of almost not really an enclosure, but something of a kind of an embrace on this end of the valley anyway. And then it widens out into, that big valley plain where all the agriculture is. And so I get the simultaneous feeling of being in the mountains, up against the mountains, but also with the spaciousness around it all that I love. So for me, that's what it's, and I've always liked what I liked about the culture of Bozeman, because I was gone for 8 years, and then I came back in the mid-90s, and that was 23 years ago when I came back, and it was still a place where I felt left alone. And that's not necessarily a community feeling, but there's a certain freedom that I felt this place gave to me, and I think maybe others, that we could really be individualistic, that we had so much room to explore our feeling and just what it is to be. And I like that. And time seemed very slow. And when I came back, I didn't have a job for the first year, and I was trying to be a poet, and so I would write poetry, and then I realized that that was going to drive me crazier, faster than other routes. But I would just walk around, and I would walk up and down the alleys, and I would walk down the street, and no one would look at me like, what are you doing? You don't have a job. So I thought that there was a lot of freedom to be, and I've always liked that about Bozeman. And I think Joanne also hit on something, and that is the kind of intellectual curiosity of people here. I think I've always liked that.
Yeah,
you can have good conversations here that keep going. So for me, I guess that the place starts with the landscape. Can I share a poem?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because that hits.
But first, let me remind folks you're listening to KGVM in Bozeman.
KGVM in Bozeman. It's a poem about how a sense of place is derived from the landscape. And that was sort of the theme I was just hitting on. This is a poem by Wallace Stevens, and it's called A Mythology Reflects Its Region. And I think it kind of hits on some of the notes I was trying to hit on. A Mythology Reflects Its Region. A mythology reflects its region. Here in Connecticut, we never lived in a time when mythology was possible. But if we had, that raises the question of the image's truth. The image must be of the nature of its creator. It is the nature of its creator increased, heightened. It is he anew in a fresh youth, and it is he in the substance of his region. Wood of his forest and stone out of his fields, or from under his mountains. I like that because it's sort of the outside intake that I was hitting on earlier.
Yeah, lovely poem.
So that's my sense of place.
Well, I'm coming from a little bit different place than folks. I came here relatively late in life after growing up in New England for 25 years or so. And it's interesting to think of the contrast. You know, I grew up in a large kind of working class suburb, Framingham, Massachusetts, which in many ways you would think would be about the most generic place around. But, you know, back in our neighborhood, we had a two block walk away, our own little neighborhood serving businesses. We had a pizza parlor, a supermarket, drugstore, all that were serving a relatively small part of this very, very large town. So it felt, you know, we had a very strong sense of belonging and community there, I would say, despite being in this enormous town with many different clusters of development. And part of it, you know, in that time, I think the population was relatively stable. And I think that's one of the challenges, you know, in an area like the Gallatin Valley, is we see such transients compared to other parts of Montana, at least,
right.
With many young people coming to the Gallatin Valley to come and ski for a couple of years or do river trips or attend Montana State University. So I think that's part of the challenge for us, is how do you maintain a strong sense of community and belonging in a place where so many people are coming and going and the population is turning over. I think that's where about 50% every 4 years or so. From my own experience going there, living in Burlington, Vermont for many years, it was kind of a place that reeked of physical sense of place. You know, it had a very distinctive physical setting, but also had, you know, very strong sense of history, of architecture. So those physical elements certainly are a big part of it. For me coming to Bozeman, my motivation was certainly in part based on the fact that it had what seemed to be a vibrant downtown. It had neighborhoods that felt cohesive in a sense. And part of our conversation, I think, would be interesting is when we're talking about a sense of place, how much of that is just your connection to the community, and what can be done to increase people's sense of community so that as the Gallatin Valley grows, we don't feel alienation and we're not feeling like we're disconnected from people and see things like, you know, more and more people blasting their car horns when they get delayed at an intersection, and the kind of things that accompany the interactions of more densely populated areas, I guess, where people, to stereotype a bit, just don't feel like that the person they're dealing with on the road probably isn't someone they know or are going to know. Any thoughts to,
Joanne, you want
to play off of that?
It's interesting when you say that, because that is our dilemma right now. People that have lived here a long time feel a lot of resentments because their sense of place has been upturned. And so, you know, a sense of place is also memory. That's just drives that sense of place. And also it's almost, you know, kinetic in the body about the sense of place. And the other day, I was out at Yellowstone and seeing a friend. And on the way back, it took me 20 minutes because of the traffic. And at that point, I was wondering, who lives in all of these houses? What do these people do? Because the other thing that is giving us a sense of place that's really dislodging itself is that we're getting to be an expensive community. People move here, they buy big houses, they have money, things get expensive. And so for those of us who have been in community for a while here, we see that change. But of course, we were also a part of that change. It's just out of time. So none of us ever really own the complete sense of place. It's always changing. The people that move here today, last week, last year, their sense of place is going to be so profoundly different from our sense of place because it's geographic, it's houses, it's community.
Gosh, and Joanne, you're wait a second, I'm sorry to talk over you, but okay. I used to do that when in your classroom too.
Well, I just wanted to mention one thing that was the community and that coalesced. And that was the old Rialto Theater that had these foreign films. So everybody that went there were like a family. We all would chat with each other. And that sense of community, fact that we all like these films, and it sort of pronounced ourselves in Bozeman. That feeling I don't have anymore, but I don't resent it. Because change is inevitable, and because I came here, and I disrupted this community.
Too. Joanne, I find your dynamism and your acceptance of change to be very threatening.
I am a threatening person
that way. You're 86 years old, and you're way more flexible than I am. I'm 57.
You were my student. You're just a boy.
I should have, you know, I should have absorbed more of you, obviously. I guess I'm exaggerating only slightly, because I do agree. Of course, everything's going to change, and yet, here's my trump card to play in this game.
Ooh.
The trump card is that for me, what has always been a crucial ingredient of the sense of place that I have enjoyed in Bozeman so much is that freedom that I was talking about, the freedom that it has always given me as a person, and I think other people might share that, the freedom to be, the freedom to dwell, the freedom to live, and to enjoy the passage of time and boredom, right?
Well,
and to be in that space where you can, you know, cultivate yourself inside, and that's really important to me as a human being, and I think you could get a sense of the freedom to dwell in Brooklyn. I think you could get it in, you know what I mean? I think you can get it in Tallahassee. I think you can get it in San Antonio. But what I'm hearing, what I'm feeling is a sense of turbulence. And I'm feeling time speeding up. And I'm feeling a bit of estrangement. And Jeff, you said that hopefully we can continue to be dynamic and grow and retain a sense of place in spite of all these changes.
Yeah, that's our challenge.
But I think it is in spite of. That's how it feels to me. I don't want to be the resentful person that you mentioned, but I'm just saying how I'm responding.
Well, many people feel a kind of an outrage because everything is happening so fast and they're not a part of it. You know, we're observers in our own community where we used to be so active. And so we have much more of a passive role. I feel like that when I see whole villages go up and I have no idea that they were happening. And but I still, talking about your idea of freedom, what I really love about living right here is I can step out the door and I can walk all over. And if now, if I walk 25 minutes, I can be out of town. It used to be 10. Mm-hmm. But I can still own that wonderful view of the mountains, of the changing scenes, of those wonderful trees. I have favorite trees in the fall that I go to look at and see what they're like. So that's
Jeff,
there.
You made a motion as if you wanted to say something.
Well, I was just interested in, you know, the talk, for me, the talk of sense of place is integral with a sense of community. And so when we're talking about the growth of the Gallatin Valley, what are some of the ideas that you two have for how do we retain that sense of community in spite of growth and the rapid change that's coming? And I think that, you know, in the city of Bozeman, I know there are some very good programs in place, a neighborhood identification and coordination program, and I'll fess up, my wife, Jennifer Rockney, is the volunteer coordinator for that program with the city, which also has a dedicated staff person. Tanya is the city coordinator, and I think that's a really positive example of trying to get people interacting with each other at the neighborhood level, and then through those neighborhood voices communicating to the city so that the city's development is at least hearing from representatives of the neighborhood as things are developing.
Should we pause?
Just leave it running. It's, at this point, you're going to have to splice it anyway.
Right.
So,
good.
Probably easier to have one less track to deal with importing into Audacity.
I had a question for Joanne.
What did you just say?
Actually, while we're...
Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. I forgot to say that we should have all made sure our phones were off before.
Sorry about that.
So where were we?
Talking about neighborhood coordination and some amount of
Right. Neighborhoods
talking up to the city.
Right. So I think that's a positive example of, you know, the city in Bozeman being really engaged in trying to keep people connected at the neighborhood level. Are there some other ideas that you two have to offer about keeping that sense of community and sense of place in a time of rapid growth and change?
You know, that's really important, and especially since we are, all of us in this country seem to be so polarized, so different in our feelings. And that, you know, people are even saying, you know, we don't talk politics. And so there are barriers up, and how to get over those barriers in a non-threatening manner and being curious rather than condemning. We need to do that. But we also have leadership that is polarizing, and that is difficult. So to maintain our sense of equanimity towards other people, not judgmental, and move towards them with curiosity and neighborliness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to start someplace. And if it starts here in Bozeman, that's a great start.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think on a slightly different note, one of the challenges of the current sort of pattern of growth and development is that it's a lot faster. It seems that it's being grafted onto the community for the benefit of people who don't know what Bozeman is yet, but they're about to land here, and I'm not sure how clued in they are to the place before they come. And so there's a sense that not only is the community growing at a very rapid pace, it's faster than 4%, which is unsustainable. Not only is it growing at a fast pace, but it's also growing for the benefit of people who are, in many respects, particularly economically, more advantaged than the people who live here. And so that also leads to some feelings of disorientation. Not only that, but when you look at the fabric, and you look at the construction, you look at the buildings that are being put down on the landscape, they seem to have what distinguishes a lot of the new stuff downtown and the things that are planned, and there's a staggering number of projects that are planned for the next 5 years, is the unthought of them. The
yes.
Unthought. Like, what is not thought in these buildings is their relatedness to place, their relation to what it is that they provide.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be providing dwellings, and they're supposed to be, if they're a mixed-use building, they're supposed to be providing some local commercial. But what they basically are shells that were provided through an investment mechanism to attract future people who don't necessarily have a clue about Bozeman, who are not necessarily going to put down roots here, who are not necessarily going to use these as their principal residences, who are going to be buying a product that's 5, 6, 7 times more expensive than what the average Bozemanite making average Bozeman wages can afford. And so there I find to be a gigantic disjunction. And so how do we join those two things? And I think the notion that neighborhoods coming together is a great one. And if different parts of the community can have a self-awareness and then also link that to other parts of the community, then you start to have conversations that are sort of transcendent of, like, projects. However, I don't know what your thoughts were about, say, Bozeman. You might have thought that they were quixotic, but I thought that they had a really great cause. And then they presented themselves with thoroughness and detail. You might not agree with what they were doing, but I spent some time on the Bozeman City Commission, and my take on what happened in that whole kerfluffle regarding the Black and Olive building was that when, say, Bozeman came in with their arguments, and whether they were pleasant to listen to or not, they were organized, they had awareness, they had definite notions, and they presented these over and over and over again. And they were opposed to this, the scope and the size of the project. Not to the project, period, but to the way that it was manifesting. And if it could have been scaled back, they might have been able to swallow it. But here's the deal that I thought was damaging to our civic life, and that was that the commission voted for it.
Yes.
Because there are times when, first of all, they had a legal basis to deny it, and that was expressed public opinion. That's actually a criterion. But there are times when you might disagree, but if hundreds of Bozemanites keep coming into your meetings and keep saying these arguments over and over again, you get down on your knees and you say, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it might even go against your grain, but to me, that's what leadership is, and that's a part of community, and that's a part of a sense of place.
Exactly.
How important, what is the relative importance of a concerted neighborhood group? You can label them as NIMBYs and say that they're just protesting against the inevitable. And I think that there was they were dismissed, essentially.
That's right.
So I think that's kind of damaging.
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting, too, is the people building these projects. I talk to workmen like, because I really like blue-collar workmen. I think that they keep the world going. And they don't get nearly enough credit in my mind, but anyway, so I asked them, what do you think of this project, number one? And number two, where do you live? And they do not live in the town that they are building. They're living out of town. They're traveling as far away as Three Forks, Townsend, and out of Livingston to come here and make a wage. But their days are long. And I think that the other component, Steve and Jeff, to that growth would be, where are your workmen going to live? What are you providing for your workmen that are giving the days of their lives away from their families, exhausted because of the traveling? That's a part of community, too, is imagination for those. The firemen then down the street were practicing because they wanted to be able to do things without the danger. Practicing. So I asked the fireman, I said, you know, that building, some teachers used to live there. And this one fireman said, yeah, I used to live here. I said, where do you live now? none of them live in the town they protect. So when we talk about community, I'd like for us to get really serious about what that means, and that means all of us. That means those that are building this community, strengthening it economically, and yet at the same time are outside of that sphere.
Mm. Right. Jeff?
Well, you know, in the vein of community building, one thing that I found really interesting, the Bozeman Community Foundation last fall, I think it was, put on this program called A Seat at the Table. Maybe it was in the wintertime.
Oh, yes.
Where the whole intent was to bring together people who didn't share specific, you know, personal connections or, you know, neighborhood connections, to sit down for a couple of hours and simply have conversation about the communities of the Gallatin Valley and what their concerns were, what their hopes and dreams were. So I think that's a really interesting model for folks to look at, and the results of that, and something hopefully will be built upon over time. But, you know, I think some of those activities, block parties, are a thing I know a few neighborhoods have done in some of the Gallatin Valley communities. I feel badly that I haven't taken it upon myself to do that, one of those in our neighborhood. Maybe this conversation will inspire me to actually take the lead in doing that. But I think creating, extending hospitality in a sense to people who are not our chosen friends or coworkers, or, you know, just deliberately making effort to get to know a broader spectrum of people, I think is part of what is a potential antidote to some of the problems that we've been talking about here.
What happened to the information that came out of those meetings?
I believe that is now available on the Bozeman Community Foundation website. We'll have to check on that, but we'll make a note on our next show whereabouts if that's not accurate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think as I'm sitting here reflecting on our conversation, it strikes me that the roots of any intentional community building come from your sense of place. And if you have a strong sense of place, then you have an instinct to preserve and protect it. And then you need to be able to find a way to actually become socially active. And I appreciate your suggestions about ways to start those conversations and to broaden one's circle. And then also to realize what is the nature of the struggle. I mean, the nature of the struggle is not just getting to know each other, but to be perfectly blunt about it, the nature of the struggle is the finance institutions of this world that have found this place to be a very convenient location to get rent. And that's essentially what we're struggling against, is money. And we can talk about, like, how would we build a community, and we could get into a gymnasium somewhere with butcher paper on little tripods, and we could do visual surveys, and I bet we would all agree that we'd like the European village concept, where neighbors knew neighbors and businesses were locally owned and we had relationships. We would probably all agree on that, but until we can somehow push back on the flood of dollars that are coming in here from finance institutions that are not native to Montana, maybe not even native to the United States of America. Right. I mean, to me, that seems to be the real struggle, is to push back on the money. Because if we can't do that, we're going to be bystanders. We might be self-aware bystanders, but, you know, so for me, what is the nature of our struggle? It seems to be the struggle against dollars.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a issue that comes to a head in a much bigger way, I think, in the next couple of years. Right now, obviously, we have just about every corporate chain you could imagine out on 19th Street and 7th and Huffine. Wow. But up to this point, downtown Bozeman, downtown Livingston, Belgrade, largely, they've maintained really a base of independent, locally owned businesses, each with its unique character and offerings, with a very few exceptions. Now with Bozeman, the city crossing the 50,000 resident population threshold in the next year or so, or 2 years, we're going to see a lot of these corporate chains that have that as their kind of population criteria looking to move into downtown. Right now, there's nothing in place to discourage that or prevent it. So I think a lot of people come to Bozeman are very attracted by the unique downtown and Livingston and other communities as well. People need to recognize that's going to change in a hurry without deliberate, proactive work to set in place policy that protects local independent businesses and prevents the influx of chains, because without it, that's the future.
Well, the other thing that we haven't considered is our natural resources here. When these hotels go up, first thing I think about, where's the water coming from for all of these hotels, each room? You know, there's also that incredible impact of cars on our environment, of smog, so that, well, we want to be open and, you know, we have population that is moving to these areas that have money. But the one thing that money can't buy is our water back or our fresh air. So we have to think about those things too. And I wish that was more of a component in our growth.
And it's possible to make that a component of our growth. But it would take dedication of both citizens to bring it up, because I don't think it's going to happen sort of endogenously from within the ranks of city planning and the city bureaucracy.
No.
It doesn't strike me that there's a lot of pushback. I haven't really noticed many conversations about sustainability. You're talking about a resource.
Yeah.
And I think my hunch is that people think that anything can be engineered and that anything can be overcome. A so-called limitation, let's say, like water, I think that can be overcome. And I'm not faithful that something like a water resource is going to curb growth. Not in the city. Maybe in the hinterlands, right? Because they have all kinds of new non-degradation rules and restrictions on the number of wells that you can punch. But in the city, I think that they'll find a way.
Yeah. So we're still here.
We seem befuddled.
Well, you know, we're still here, and I still love this town, and I still love the chimerical weather and the fact that we have 9 months of cold and 2.5 months of summer. I could do it.
What's the other half of the month?
I mean, okay. Okay, world, I could do it. But, you know, we thought this would maybe discourage people from coming here, but it's the clean air. And, you know, I'd like to say one thing about people coming here. The great thing they come here for is not only the beautiful mountains, but the education. Mm-hmm. The schools, the teachers are still doing it. Every school, I hear nothing but great things about what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's a great draw for young families.
Absolutely. Something to be grateful for.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll throw in one idea to stir the pot. I think part of what Bozeman's sense is for people looking from the outside is a very white community.
Uh-oh.
And
yes.
So a lot of us here talk about, you know, the lack of diversity in Bozeman, but given the current trends, that's probably going to get even worse as the cost of living goes up.
Absolutely.
So how do we change that? Can it be changed? The fact that from the thinking about the Gallatin Valley from a perspective of someone who is non-white, if you're a person of color looking at considering a job offer here in the community, and you look around you and you see very few people of color, you see very high cost of living, and you see often letters to the editor in the Chronicle with rather racist rants in them. How do you change that perception and that sense of place in the negative sense?
Boy, that's a really tough one. And the thing is that, say, out there, to have diversity in a community is to also recreate it. And so we miss, in some ways, an important dimension to life by having us so all white, so all perfect, so all wealthy. We're losing something by not having the diversity that gives us their culture, their art, their intellects. And so the more diversified, you know, just think of New York City as a diversified city, and it's a hub of cultural richness and change, you know? And so when we protect ourselves and build a wall, cultural wall around our cities about, because of economics, then we also are walled in and deprived of that incredible creativity and variety.
I agree 100%, and I believe that it's an economic injustice that creates a social imbalance. And so for me, the first response to that is to tax luxury. And I don't even know that the state of Montana allows municipalities to put a luxury tax on second and third homes, but much of what drives the downtown so-called housing market is second and third home and fourth home, and I don't know what it is for people, but if they cannot prove that this is their primary residence, then there should be a hefty tax imposed on those dwellings. And if you want to discourage the continual build-out of luxury homes, then I think you have to start taxing it. We have to tax money. I don't know what the other option is. That could bring the price point down, because that would help to bring some extinction to the product itself. And unless you can stop people from putting up products that are for the creme de la creme, we're going to continue to be white and whiter and whitest. So that would be my first take on it.
The other thing, too, is that people like myself, and there are many of us, this old community, we're being taxed. For those who know, these beautiful homes go up around or once so much, so that impacts the whole neighborhood. And so, in some sense, our own, living in our own homes has become a great financial difficulty for us. Because we've lived in them for, say, 30, 40, 50 years, and the taxes go up, and yet we may be retired people. And those retired people have added to a lot of the richness in this community and how it got here right now.
That sense of being a passive observer of our environment, and what do we not allow ourselves to think? We don't allow ourselves to think that we could stop growth. That's a forbidden thought. I would say it's a forbidden thought.
Oh, yeah.
People think it's impossible. People think it's wrongheaded. People think that that's an elitist thought. But can we think it? Can we think it through all of its steps? And then if we're going to discard it at the end, can we then discard it? But can we first think about it and talk about it together? I'd like to be a part of that conversation. If we can't stop it, can we curtail it? Can we actually set a target for what we would consider to be a sustainable rate of growth? And can we also make it a sort of a broader reach of growth to those who have differing capacities when it comes to earning money? I mean, these are, to me, these are sort of verboten, and I don't think they should be. For some reason, there's like a gag rule on us because it's a sacred cow in our culture, because we've all sort of imbibed a certain amount of libertarian free market thinking. And I believe that that's inhibiting on our sort of what we consider to be the realm of the possible, right? Because we don't allow ourselves to think certain thoughts.
Yeah, and the thing is that to incorporate those people into it, the people that come in, to also let them be a part of the conversation of how can we be fair and equitable about what it means for you to be here.
Should we convene again and have a conversation along those lines?
When you talk about free markets, part of the problem is that there is not a free market when it comes to development. The costs are socialized while the benefits for developers are privatized. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Oh, what a delightful prospect. Let's take it on.
Yes, indeed. Well, I think we should probably bring this conversation to a close. I thank you, Joanne, for opening your heart and your home to us this morning. And Jeff Milchen, thank you for your great participation in this program. And it's been a joy.
My pleasure.
And thanks to everyone for listening to us on KGVM Bozeman.
Yeah, this was fun.